Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, which also sponsors PBS's CEO Exchange, online at shrm.org.
A delayed reaction.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Whether or not the Fed cuts interest rates again today, you won't see an immediate impact. These things take time. For example, the rates on 30-year mortgages have fallen to 5.5%. But that's the slow-moving effect of last year's Fed cuts. It's not from the emergency cut last week. Mortgage rates aren't tied directly to the Fed's interest rate. Still, this morning we learned that home refinancing applications are at a 4-year high because of those falling rates. Now, about today's decision, we turn to our reporter in Washington, Steve Henn.
Just last week, the Fed cut interest rates by 0.75%. That's a huge drop by historical standards, and Hugh Johnson, Johnson Illington Advisors, says it puts Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke in a bit of a bind.
It's an awful lot of ammunition to spend in a little over a week.
After all, the Fed can't go on cutting interest rates forever. With rates at 3.5% now, there's not a lot left to cut.
The Fed has done a lot already.
Richard DeCasar is chief economist at National City Corporation.
We really have not yet even begun to see the effects of past rate actions.
But Wall Street wants more. Johnson says investors are acting a bit like a spoiled child.
Investors clearly, I don't want to say are demanding, but certainly expecting the Federal Reserve will reduce interest rates.
If they're disappointed, expect the markets to throw a temper tantrum. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Well, the markets are pretty calm this morning. Calm before the storm? We don't know. The Dow is down 58 points in the first few minutes of trading to 12,422. The NASDAQ is down 7. The S&P 500 has dropped 6. In Asia today, stocks fell between 1 and 3%. European shares are down about 1%. We're expecting an announcement today from the company Altria. Altria is planning to spin off its cigarette company Philip Morris International. It'll keep Philip Morris USA. But what will it do with the American cigarette market? It's a good question. Marketplace's Janet Babin has more from North Carolina Public Radio.
It's an uphill battle for cigarette companies in the U.S. Smoking here declines every year, and that trend's expected to continue. Analyst Greg Warren with Morningstar says that puts added pressure on Altria and Philip Morris USA to branch out.
I could see them potentially making an acquisition like UST, which is a big smokeless tobacco producer, just to sort of diversify their revenue streams, because as it stands right now, they're just collecting money for the states.
Under a 1998 settlement, U.S. tobacco companies, including Philip Morris, pay a portion of their revenues to states each year to cover tobacco-related health costs. Philip Morris recently bought cigar maker John Middleton in an effort to become less dependent on cigarettes. Meanwhile, parent company Altria also has a 20% stake in the company that makes Miller beer. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Wednesday, January 30th on Marketplace.org. The Florida primary is now history. John McCain is the Republican frontrunner. Exit polls show voters were mostly influenced by signs of, surprise, surprise, the faltering economy. Marketplace's John Dimsdale has more.
Nearly half the voters here rated the economy as the most important issue. Terrorism came in a distant second, cited by less than 20%. 9 of every 10 Democrats said the economy was in trouble. 63% of Republicans agreed. These voters were in Hollywood, Florida.
The economy is important to everyone. We all live in the same world. We all eat the same food. We all pay insurance a lot more in Florida, of course. But I think we stand a much better chance with Hillary than we do with a Republican who has put us in this dilemma.
I want to vote Democratic. But I don't like their candidates, so I may go to John McCain.
There's a recession coming, and somebody's got to do something about it.
I voted for Huckabee. I like what he's talking about, building the infrastructure.
Who did you vote for?
Barack. He may be the best hope for our country. I think we need something different. If our country goes down the tube financially, nothing else is going to make any difference, right?
Florida's electorate is much older than other states. Nearly half of both Republicans and Democrats are over 60. In Fort Lauderdale, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
The company that makes Cadbury chocolate bars and cream eggs buys much of its cocoa from the West African nation of Ghana. But a study by the company found that farmers in Ghana are only producing about 40% of the cocoa beans that could be harvested. So Cadbury is teaming up with the United Nations to do something about that. Gretchen Wilson explains.
Cadbury says the initiative hits a sweet spot, boosting cocoa yields while improving the lives of small-scale farmers. The company's research in Ghana found some farmers in its supply chain produce as little as 4 sacks of beans a year. The global price of cocoa has been hit hard over the years, leaving farmers destitute. Tim Newman is a cocoa expert with the International Labor Rights Forum.
Cocoa farmers are basically trapped in a cycle of poverty.
Cadbury wants to teach farmers how to get more beans from their trees and how to grow compatible crops to get more income. This year, the company will put $2 million towards the project. Of course, Cadbury benefits too. It's locking up its relationship with cocoa-producing areas, similar to the way oil and gas companies do. Its chocolate footprint will give Cadbury a leading edge over competitors if cocoa farming wanes worldwide. I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
We continue now with our series Plan B on adapting to global warming. Today the focus is on the Arctic. Levels of sea ice are at their lowest since measurements started in 1979. NASA predicts the Arctic Sea could be ice-free as early as the summer of 2013. That's obviously bad news for the animals who live there. From our innovations desk at North Carolina Public Radio, Janet Babin reports.
We've all seen the movies and commercials with those adorable polar bear cubs. They swim like toddlers in an icy Arctic wonderland. Yeah, well, in the real world, polar bear cubs are starving. Last fall, University of Alberta scientist Andrew DeRoche observed 8-month-old cubs in Hudson Bay, the Canadian Arctic.
They're clearly in very poor shape. The mothers probably stopped nursing them. They were pretty listless and not showing a lot of energy, which is really atypical for cubs, which are normally pretty playful.
One of the reasons for this? The Arctic sea ice is melting. DeRoche says Canada's northern communities depend on the polar bear for tourism and hunting. Melting ice means bears have to swim farther to hunt or forage inland. He racked his brain for a solution until colleague and engineer Peter Flynn called.
What you do is go out onto the ice and pump a lot of water up on top of the ice.
Flynn would use 50-foot barges with windmills on them to pump seawater onto the existing ice. Thicker ice takes longer to melt. That would give the bears more time to hunt in the critical early spring.
Let's suppose for Hudson Bay we were going to start with 10 barges. So you'd be talking in something in the order of $25 million. Is it worth it?
Many biologists would say no. But whatever it takes is worth it to Wilfred Chevelle, a tour operator in South Africa. He designed and installed hundreds of fiberglass nests for penguins dying from habitat loss on South Africa's Dyer Island.
I must admit there was quite a few smirks and a few laughs when I started to come up with the idea, but the skeptical guys see it's working and there's now talk of going to other islands and other localities.
So far, Chevelle's project has cost $50,000. But what about the fish the penguins eat or the seals hunted by polar bears? Many scientists say tinkering with one species can endanger another. But to Duke University professor Rob Jackson, if a species is close to extinction, we've already tinkered.
And for me, allowing species to disappear is much more disruptive than intervening, ideally in small ways, to save those species.
I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Our series was produced in conjunction with the Center for Investigative Reporting. The checks are halfway in the mail. The House voted overwhelmingly yesterday to send tax rebate checks to most Americans. Now the Senate gets a hold of this stimulus package. Some senators think it's a bad idea. Others want to expand it. Commentator Robert Reich is against the plan. He says even beyond the taxpayer rebates, there's a bigger problem with it.
Perhaps the silliest part of an already silly stimulus bill is a provision giving corporations big tax deductions this year on the costs of new machinery. These deductions are normally spread out over several years. The idea is to get businesses to invest in more machinery, which will stimulate the economy. But accelerated depreciation, as it's called, doesn't work. Almost the same tax break was enacted in 2002, and studies show just about no increase in business investment as a result. Why? Because companies won't invest in more machines when demand is dropping for the stuff the machines make. And right now, demand is dropping for just about everything. This tax break exemplifies the illogic of what's called supply-side economics. The thinking goes, if you reduce the cost of investing, you'll get more investment. What's left out is the demand side of the equation. Without consumers who want to buy a product, there's no point in making it, regardless of how many tax breaks go into it. Which gets us to the real problem. Most consumers are at the end of their ropes and can't buy more. Real incomes are no higher than they were in 2000, while food and energy and healthcare costs are all rising faster than inflation. And home values are dropping, which means an end to home equity loans and refinancing. Most of what's being earned in America is going to the richest 5%. But the rich devote a smaller percent of their earnings to buying things than the rest of us because, after all, they're rich, which means they already have most of what they want. Instead, the rich invest their earnings wherever around the world they can get the highest return. Now, add all this together, and there's just not enough consumer demand out there to keep the American economy going. We're finally feeling the whirlwind of widening inequality and ever more concentrated wealth. Supply-siders who want to cut taxes on corporations and the rich just don't get it. Neither does most of official Washington.
Robert Reich was Labor Secretary under President Clinton. His latest book is called Super Capitalism. We have a place where you can rant and rave. It's called the Marketplace Confessional, online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.